Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. I've got my Kleenex. I was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana, but my home is Lafayette, Louisiana, not New Orleans. I just wanted to get that straight up front. My home group is the Gulf Coast Group in Lafayette, Louisiana. We're a spinoff, speaking to the mic, okay. We're a spinoff of this group, and we started about 4 years ago. We meet on Monday nights. We have a big book meeting at 6 o'clock. We have a Thursday night 11-step meeting, just like the meeting here on Monday nights. And we also have a Tuesday night meeting on Saturday nights, just like the Tuesday meeting here. So if you're down in Lafayette, please join us. We've had some people visit us from this group. For those of you, before I get into my story, I'll just, you know, let it all out. I probably won't remember all the rules and the suggestions. I think a few have been added over the years. But I can't thank this group enough for my sobriety, for walking me through the 12 steps, for the 9 sponsors I had over the course of 3 years. My sobriety date is December 5th, 2001. I have a little over 13 and a half years. I have a sponsor. Her name is Arisa. She's in Boston. I got sober in this group. This group gave me my life. This group has done so much for me. And I always poo-pooed when people spoke at the podium and cried. And I just can't help it because I haven't been back to the Tuesday night meeting in 6 years. And a lot's happened since I left. But I'm going to go back and forth. But what I'd like to do is just start in on my story. But I wanted those of you who are new to know that if you're here tonight and you're fearful or afraid or don't feel like you belong here and this group isn't for you, I understand. At 31 days, I walked through those doors with 30 greeters grabbing me, hugging me, holding me. And I tried to sit in the back and I was ushered to the front of this room. And that lasted for about 8 years until I moved to Lafayette. You know, as a child, I just never felt right. I never felt okay. I just wanted to belong. I believe that I had alcoholism way before I picked up. You know, I would look out this big window on Cortland Drive in Metairie, and I just wanted to be in somebody else's life. I wanted the normal family, the station wagon with the dog, you know, the mother and the father who cared so much, the normal life, which I've learned today that there is no normal life. Normal life is what we make of it. It's how we live our life. It's how we grow our spiritual life. The first time I picked up, I was about a teenager. It was 12 or 13 years old, and it was the guy on the corner. He had the Camaro. He had a bottle of gin, and I drank the whole bottle and passed out. I drank until I was 37 years old, along with a lot of other substances, you know. And before I forget, I'd like to thank Cynthia, a dear, dear friend of mine who, when I came in, who was my friend when most of you were scared of me, I was the one in the room that don't go near her. I was so crazy. 20-some-odd years of drinking and outside substances, suffering from this spiritual malady. I could never get enough of anything, more of this, more of that. Just pick one. I'll have one. That was the person I was. And when I got in here, it was people like Cynthia and my friend Jackie and some of the elder statesmen in this group who held my hand, even though I was absolutely crazy. And I was so unlovable, and all I wanted to do was be loved and be liked by you. And you did love me. You did. And that's probably why I'm one of the reasons I'm sober today and I'm married. I got married in this group, and I have a child today. People like me don't deserve this. They absolutely don't deserve this. I was the type of alcoholic that I would end up in strange places. I would forget what I did the night before. I would end up in high-speed chases with the police in Chalmette, Louisiana. I thought it was normal. My father was part of the police academy or force, and I had a sheriff's badge, so it always got me out of stuff. One time when the police were following me and I drove my BMW up on the bywater, it was a median, up onto somebody's house. And I thought that was normal. And I remember running out with a loaded gun and other substances and totally inebriated and saying, but you don't know who I am. You don't know who my father is. And they cuffed me and they took me away. And, you know, I thought, okay, so what do I do now? I'm going to move. I'm going to move somewhere. So I totally get it, Ingrid, when you talk about those geographics, you know, but New York wasn't ready for me yet. I was still in New Orleans. I was still drinking. I was a gutter woman. I drank Pete's Special in the hurricane. I drank for every excuse. Mardi Gras was a big deal for me. I loved the parades because I could dress up and I would get drunk and fall off a float and wear all leather. And I thought that's how everybody lived. And I just went through life, my teenage years, my college years. And I lived in a town where it was free. Liquor was free on certain nights of the week. 3-for-1, ladies' night. And I didn't know that I had a problem. You know, I had heard about Alcoholics Anonymous somewhere along the way, but I, like most of you, the guys in the raincoats under the bridge with the beer can, you know, but I had to do a little more damage along the way. I hurt a lot of people. I was the tornado roaring through the lives of others. And when I say roaring, like Bill talks about it, I absolutely tried to destroy everything in my path, everyone that loved me. Even when I came in this group, I was part of the destruction. I wanted to destroy because you didn't know what I would been through. You don't understand. You didn't drink like me. You didn't have the bottom I did. You have no idea of where I've been. And thank God for the people in this group that said, it's okay, honey. We love you. Stay here. And Myra pulled me in the front and she sat with me. And I remember begging Peggy if I could go to the grocery with her and hold her hand when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't want to be alone. And that's how I spent most of my drinking. Although I'd start with a few drinks before I left, I was the type of alcoholic that got kicked out of a Broadway play. How does that happen? It was Rocky Horror Picture Show. I don't know if anybody remembers that. I don't know how many years it was. I had just moved to New Jersey, and I thought you guys all dressed up like we did for the Mardi Gras. It was going to be like a carnival. I'm going to be like Magenta. And my girlfriend was dressed up. So we dressed up. We go to the Broadway play. We're absolutely inebriated, drunk. We stand in line, and everybody's in suits and dresses in black. And we're in, like, rain caps on our head with lighters and all kinds of crazy stuff you do in Rocky Horror. So by the time we got to the beginning of the show, I was asked to leave. And I stood up. I don't really remember exactly what happened, but that's the type of drunk I was. You know, I suffered from severe alcoholism. I had no idea. I just could not get enough. It was never enough. I remember being on Wall Street. I worked on Wall Street, and now I own a toilet company, Wall Street Water Closets. That's what they call me down south. And yes, I am in the toilet business. So I'll just get that out. But I did work on Wall Street. And what happened for me on Wall Street is I drank. It's just like in Bill's story. You know, I had arrived. I made a ton of money. I made more money than anybody could wish for. I was on private planes and jets, and I ended up in fancy places. And I just drank, and I drank, and I drank. And what happened for me is I found a company that drank like I did. Everybody drank like I did, or so I thought. And I ended up, it was brought to my attention with this company that I needed to get some help. And I thought, well, everybody comes in late. Everybody's hungover. Everybody throws up on a subway. Doesn't everybody stay out all night long? No, they don't. You know, I'm the real alcoholic, the absolute real alcoholic. And if you're struggling with the descriptions of the alcoholic in the book, forget about it. I could not figure out what I was when I first came in here. Am I mentally depressed? Am I the Jekyll and Hyde? Where am I? Am I the manic depressant? And, you know, what you guys told me, just keep doing this work. Let's go through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's just go through it. Let's go through this work. And I made sure to let everyone know I was an addict and I was not an alcoholic. And I remember Peggy saying, we don't say that. You know, I had maybe 90 days and I finally had put my hand down and was willing to say I was an alcoholic only out of respect for this meeting. You know, it's an honor and privilege to speak in front of you. People like me do not deserve to speak in front of you. I know there's about 600 or 400 people. My group is about 30 people. And four of us are from this home group. That is God. That is absolutely God that Jeannie and Anthony have started a group with us just like this one. And I was the one who pounded when I went to Lafayette and said, you don't do it like us. You don't have meetings like us. You don't work like the, you don't work the book like us. I almost died in Alcoholics Anonymous a couple of years ago. I hit a spiritual bottom. Die an alcoholic death, except spiritual health. I wasn't willing. So what happened for me is somebody had said to me, why don't you start a meeting? I was like, yeah, I'm a leader. I'm going to tell everybody what to do. I'm going to start a meeting. And what happened for me was a little bit different from that. I ended up getting a local sponsor, and I needed that person. But she became more of a friend for me, and that's not what I need in Alcoholics Anonymous. But she loved me. She absolutely loved me. And she brought me back into Alcoholics Anonymous in Lafayette, Louisiana, when they did not do it like you. They didn't dress up like at the podium. They spoke profanity. They wore shorts. And I was a woman, the girl in this group, who didn't like the rules here. I broke, it's not rules, it's suggestions. I'm not a suggestion kind of girl. You tell me what to do, I'm going the opposite way. Right, Ava? Right? Okay, the one who brought me my first tape deck or went into CVS at a Joe and Charlie workshop or a Sunday Bagels and Big Book. She said, you need to listen to these tapes. Let's get you a tape deck. That's, yeah, I'm 50 now, so do the math. I'll just tell you. I celebrated 50 in December, and, you know, I had a little stress about that, thinking I'm 50 years old. But I'm 50. I'm sober. I haven't taken a drink in 13 and a half years, only because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and going back to Wall Street and arriving, I know some of you probably feel like you had arrived or keep arriving. You know, and there are points when I take my will back and I have arrived again. And I absolutely have to accept spiritual help. I have to get honest. I have to call someone. I have to go to my knees. I thought at like 11 or 10 years, I would have this thing. I'm done. I'm going to graduate. I remember having 31 days and just looking at the person from the podium and saying, God, if I get 10 years, I'll speak 30 minutes. Wow. And when Cynthia called me, the first thing I thought was, Cynthia, please ask someone else. I am absolutely not the right person for the job. I don't do it perfectly. You know, I struggle. I have low spots in my life. I absolutely do. This has been probably the toughest experience I've had is recently. There's no way, in a general way, I have a family member and it's courts and legal fees. And it's business related. And every day I pray for that family member. And as I was getting on the plane to come here, I got the call that the sheriffs were picking up some things at the office. And I went into total insanity, that mental obsession. I can't escape it. And I just told myself, I'm going to get off this plane. I'll call Cynthia. I'm done. I'm out of here. I don't have to speak in front of you people. God has, this program has taught me absolutely not. Stay on the plane. The woman overheard me in first class, and she said to me, I gave up my $7 billion company to my brother. I heard what you said. I will pray for you. I had to make an amends to that lady because I was very upset with her because she wouldn't give me the outlet to charge my phone so I could have Wi-Fi to check my email so I could tell everybody what to do back home. How much time do I have? Okay, great. I'm the type of alcoholic who just can't control the amount I take, no matter what. I would be at a bar, and it would just never be enough. But what happened for me is I kept thinking I would get there. I've always wanted to be somewhere. I'm either in front or I'm in back. I'm in the past or in the present. And there's some amazing teachers at Alcoholics Anonymous, as is outside Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the men that I'm able to hear today is someone who is not with us anymore, is Mark H. And I listen to his CDs and I hear him and I can actually hear what he's saying. And what I was taught very early on in Alcoholics Anonymous to get the tapes, get the CDs, and you guys are extremely fortunate And no, Bob, I won't say y'all are blessed because I'm Southern, okay? He told me don't give us any of that Southern stuff, but I am Southern today. But New York is where I had my bottom. New York is where I got sober. This was my home group, and this is where my life began. Thank you. So I'm going to just share a little bit of my bottom before I get into my recovery. It was September 11th, and I worked on Wall Street, and I was supposed to be in the building. It was 8:30, and we called to say there was a sales meeting called on the 8th floor down the block, and I was in there that day, and I was hungover as usual, and after everything had happened, I grabbed a bunch of liquor, and I got on a boat with a bunch of people I didn't know, and for about 91 days, I sat and drank and watched New York City. And I just wanted to, I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't deal with anything. And I ended up in Bayonne Hospital several times. And the lady whispered to me, the nurse, and said, "This time, you're going to die." Sweetest lady I made amends to. I had to go at 3 in the morning because she only works the night shift. Get that. Yeah, and I had to bake her cookies. I don't know what sponsor. Sponsor number 6 said that. And I did go do that. And you know what she did? She introduced me to the doctors, to all the other nurses, and said, and told my story. And she goes, "You are one of the few. I need you to stay here a few hours and see what comes through these doors." And I did. What happened for me is I was going to throw myself the last hurrah at the Delano in Miami Beach. So I did, $27,000 later with strangers. That's the type of alcoholic I was. I would knock on people's doors and hear a party going on. I would say, "Would you like to take a plane with me? Don't know your name." I end up in Miami, and I know a lot of us have done those things. That was the type of alcoholic I was. I got back. I made a phone call. I saw the National Enquirer. And at that time, I don't even know if we still have it, somebody was on the cover, and they said, "Malibu, rehab." This was 13 and a half years ago. I called them up. They answered the questions. They had a jacuzzi. They had private rooms. They had stars. And it cost $37,000, I think, at the time. And that's about all I had left in my pocketbook. I called. The lady said, "Send us a check." I did. She said, "You weren't," and I didn't get on the plane 3 or 4 times. So what happened for me is she finally came and got me. And when she came and got me, she unplugged the phone, she packed my suitcase, she threw me in the bathtub, and she gave me some type of pill so I wouldn't drink before I got on that plane. Thank you, God. My last drink was in first class. It was a horrible glass of wine. And I made every single person in first class know that it was my most miserable day. Ended up at Promises. And they told me that I would have to change. I had no idea what you people meant. Change. And I'm still living with that, and I still struggle. They said, "You're going to get all new friends. You're going to get all new friends." They said, "You're going to have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings." Had no idea what this was. None. Absolutely not. And surely had no idea I'd see 400 people and never have to get in front of you and tell you my deep, dark secrets in a general way. They asked me about 2 weeks into it to leave, because I was so rebellious in my pajamas, and all I was concerned about was who was there and how much did it cost and did they see my Gucci or Louis Vuitton and why is that man going through my luggage and checking things. They asked me to leave, and that was beginning for me. That moment of clarity, God came through me. It was sudden and profound, and it was absolutely God. Those people loved me the way you did, those therapists, those doctors. This doctor loved me so much. When 30 days, she said, "You need a lot more help. I have a best friend. Her name is Myra. She lives in New York." I had no idea. I didn't care. She said, "You need an escort too. We're going to get you an escort to get you to New York." I said, "Okay, sounds fun. Will she do my dry cleaning?" And they brought me in to New York. My first meeting was this meeting. As I said, I came in through those back doors. Myra wasn't here, and Bonnie was the first person who accepted the call. And I remember, what a rude lady. She's telling me on the phone about this Tuesday night meeting. And like, that was her home group. But never once did she make me come here. She just shared with me when I called from upstairs, totally mocus in my condo in Jersey City, and said, "Come Tuesday night. We'll be waiting for you." And she and Jeannie and all the other women and you people were there for me. And you loved me so much. And I just wanted so much for you to leave me alone. And you didn't. And you loved me. You know, My life has drastically changed, and I need to share with you, for those of you who are absolutely afraid that your life will never be the same again, it won't. That I will tell you. People like me do not deserve to get married in Alcoholics Anonymous. My wife told me a story recently that I was the woman in the group that she stayed away from. That the first time I asked her to go to a movie, she said, absolutely not. She did. And a few months later, we ended up having breakfast, and she said, she's not so bad. She told me the story. And we were married about a year later and with people from this group. And that's only because of the grace of God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I talk about the 8 or 9 sponsors, don't freak out and think you need to have 8 or 9. But if you do, it's absolutely okay. Everything is okay. What is not okay, you never have to drink again. I heard that from this podium. You never have to drink again. I didn't look like this when I came in, so don't get all like, oh, I'm yellow, I'm jaundiced, and I can't go to the meeting. I'm not pretty like all these people in suits. I get it. I was jaundiced. I was 90-some-odd pounds. My fingernails were all gone. I had been using and drinking for 20-some-odd years. People like us do not get to recreate our lives. And that is absolutely what happens, you know, when we go through this work, you know, in this big book. And these two guys, do you really think the two authors of this book ever thought that it would get this big? And that one alcoholic talking to the other, that is absolutely the only thing I have to give you is my experience. I don't have anyone else's. And I promise you, when I came in, I wanted all of your experience. And I would tell all of your stories. And I knew I was going to graduate. And I never graduated. I have some certain low spots. And without enlarging my spiritual life on a daily basis, working 10 and 11, you know, going to a meditation meeting has changed my life. After getting married, my wife had said to me, what do you think about a child? People like me don't get a child. People like me don't have children. No doctor, no attorney, no therapist. What type of mother is going to give their child to a drug addict and alcoholic? So that was what I was afraid of. So when we got the letters about adopting a child through private adoption, the first question was, did you use drugs and alcohol? And I said, absolutely not. And we discussed it, and we knew we needed to tell the truth. So we did. We told the truth. And they said, we want letters from your sponsors. James and Peggy wrote letters along with our family. And they stated our case and the way we've lived our lives the last 13 years, 15 years in AA, and where we are today. And when we met with the private adoption attorney, she said, absolutely, it will be maybe 10 to 15 years. You're on the list. I'll let you know. A few minutes, it was about maybe 5 or 6 months later, we're sitting on the beach. It was August. She said, I have a baby for you. The baby's not born. The mother asked for an open relationship, somebody who lives, a couple that lives a very open, honest relationship that has changed their life, somebody that can give their can give this child the life that they can't give them. This mother met my wife and was walked through the last 4 or 5 months with her. That is God. That is absolutely Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you believe nothing's possible, that is absolutely not true. You never have to drink again. And I know if I picked up along the way, I would not be here tonight. I would not have George. So George was born on December 16th, and we were outside the hospital, casing the hospital, and the nurse called and said, he's here, he's ready for you. He was about 30 minutes old, and we went in, and the typical alcoholics like we are, we're like, they're not doing it right. What's that thing on his chest? Why aren't they holding him right? You know, that's the alcoholic that I am. But what this book does and what the 12 steps do is they teach me about being in the now. They teach me about, you know, walking through things and being loving and being kind and following our code even when I don't want to, and making amends to the nurses or to the mother because I'm rushing her because 3 days aren't up and I'm scared I'm not going to get my child. You know, I was actually told during those 3 days that I needed to, you know, take a chill, you know. You don't tell a type A to take a chill. My wife and I are total opposite. She's, you know, spiritual being, Dalai Lama. I'm type A. I'm a workaholic, and I have to constantly constantly work this program. How I get through the day to every day is through prayer. I pray all the time. I have to tell you, I pray more than I ever did. I pray more. I pray to get through the day. I pray for my son. I pray for my brother who is challenging me with all kind of things that I don't feel at this are appropriate. But it's what I need to walk through, and I lost everything. I was one of those people, thank you, who came in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had money. I had a house. I had a car. I had a chauffeur. I remember my first sponsor, Gemma, said, get rid of the chauffeur. It was taking me to and from the diner for the watches. She goes, that's not okay. But why not? She goes, I said, I don't know how to ride a bus. Oh, no, you don't. What is it, the subway? I don't know how to ride a subway. I've never read a map. That was the end of the chauffeur. What happened is I lost the house. I ended up losing the house. I lost the job. And through those things at the time that I thought were absolutely the worst thing that could ever happen to me, to lose a job where I made so much money, where I had a beautiful house that some of you came to and celebrated my anniversaries. I lost it, foreclosure. And then that wasn't good enough. I needed bankruptcy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was ashamed to talk about this when I was about 5.5 years. When I was 5.5 years sober, I actually began to see. I was a slow one in Alcoholics Anonymous. I needed to go through the steps several times, several times. It was really slow for me. At 5.5 years, I started to feel like I fit in, like I worked these steps and it was working, and it was really working. Like I felt like I no longer felt that low self-esteem where I worried so much about what you people thought of me. And I started giving back, and I sponsored a lot of women in this group, and I still sponsor women in this group, and they still call me. And actually, they're helping me at this point in my life. And I have a minute left. If you're here tonight and you don't know if this is the right group for you or if you're an alcoholic, I was that one in the back. I was that girl. I was absolutely not an alcoholic. And I will tell you, every fiber in my being, everything, I am an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. But I had to go through the steps. I had to look at my unmanageability. I had to look at everything in my life. I had to do a four-step. And it was not easy. It was absolutely not easy. The life I have today is unbelievable. I am married to a wonderful woman. I am grateful to have a child today, and the most important thing in my life is that I don't take a drink today, and that I have a God of my own understanding. And on days when it is absolutely not working, all I do is pray, God, please guide and direct me. God, please guide and direct me. God, please guide and direct me, because I have absolutely no idea where I'm headed. Absolutely no idea. And my sponsor says that's because you're sponsorable and you're teachable. Y'all, thank you so much.